Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live, a show about love letters. We tell stories, we share letters, and the variety is just endless. Every week there's something different. And the truth is, even if two people are writing the same kind of a letter, people are writing to a mother or a grandfather who's no longer here, every story is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just like snowflakes.
All right.
So let's go right to this guest. Yes? Okay, our guest today is Miriam Mochkin, and she is the mother of two adorable boys. I mean, really adorable. I've seen pictures of them. And the wife of a wonderful rabbi. And I'm also going to say the daughter of another wonderful rabbi who happens to be a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, Miriam, let's just go to you and talk about just your life. And, you know, you're a young woman, mother of two young boys. And talk about single life. Talk about what your journey was to get these two beautiful boys.
Well, I grew up in the wonderful city of San Francisco. And what was unique about my upbringing was I'm the daughter of a rabbi. And we kept a home of an Orthodox Hasidic lifestyle. So I would say I was the only girl my age living that lifestyle in the city of San Francisco.
Was that hard?
I didn't look at it as hard because that's what I knew. And I had lots of friends mm-hmm. who, you know, practiced differently than I did. But that's just how it was.
But also your father, your parents are such glamour people in that world, and they're so easy in a secular world.
Yeah, my parents brought us up very open-minded and accepting mm-hmm. of everyone. Talking about love, they said, you love everyone, from, you know, the homeless man to your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
There's no judging between the two. But what was super unique in regards to leading that into a single life was that I went away to an all-girls school starting in seventh grade,
junior
high school. Uh-huh. So I was part of a system that really was all girls from, you know, starting in my teenage years through starting my young adult life.
Now, you're smiling like that was wonderful.
I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it. You know, of course, we loved talking about boys and there was always that, but it stopped there. You know, it was always known that when you're ready and eligible to get married, that's when you actually, you know, embark on the journey of getting to know that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's no dating just for goofy dating's sake.
No. Dating mm-hmm. in our heads was always portrayed as when you're ready to pursue it to a marriage.
So dating is a serious business to lead to something. And for just fun time, you would do things with your girlfriends or groups of people.
Just, the fun things that teenagers do.
Yeah.
Minus the making out with guys.
Yeah.
So what my sister and I are very close in age. We're 16 months apart, and we decided that to try to find the one, we'd go live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And New York has a very large population of Orthodox Jews, especially Chabad Hasidic Jews, which is the community we were a part of. So comparing that to San Francisco, where we were the only one, and there was, I think, one other family who had one eligible boy who we grew up with, who it wasn't going to happen with him. So New York was our best bet.
Well, you can't pick from a field of one.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were in New York. We actually were both working on the Upper West Side.
Mm-hmm.
And just
what were
really,
you doing?
I was working at the office of a Jewish preschool there.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent weekends in the city. And it was a lot of fun going out to kosher restaurants because there were none in San Francisco.
Things you could do there that
you
couldn't go out to eat here. Yeah.
So it was a great social scene.
So you could live like a normal person if you had a larger community.
Yeah. I grew up not thinking that I was missing anything,
right.
But it just, there were perks in New York,
yes.
You know? And it was really, There was a scene in New York of, okay, we're ready to get married. People are looking at us.
And is that just because you were a certain age?
Or? Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're a certain age. You know, we were done with our higher learning after high school. We mm-hmm. went to Israel for a few years, did higher learning, and then we moved to New York and lived together. So all
you
our
and your sister.
Yeah, me and my sister.
Yes.
And she's older than me, so she was dating a lot, and I was kind of waiting for her. I
wanted to
find
give her
first? Space. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's also, but there was always different little occurrences around the neighborhood where it was like, okay, tell mom to check that guy out. And what does that mean, check that guy out? Here's where
good
my love letter begins.
Yes.
Because in our community, what we do is we have a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of the song Matchmaker, Matchmaker,
yes,
make me a match, it's not really how it goes.
Okay, now that's really good. Let's tell the truth. So how do you find a matchmaker? How do you know which matchmaker is good for you?
So there are quite a few who call it their profession mm-hmm. in different communities.
And word just gets out?
And you go to them and you tell them what you're looking for. You have to be really confident and ready for yourself to take that step. Me and my sister were not so into that. We mm-hmm. really wanted our parents to do all the hard work.
Like what?
Like find the matchmaker, research the person who the potential, mm-hmm. you know, guy, and really find out if there's the same goals involved, what similar values, you know, what they, if there were any traumas in their life that would bring them to a state where we could deal, you know, with that, and if we were prepared for that.
So in other words, a trauma in somebody else's life could have an impact on the relationship with you or as a parent, and so you want to know about that ahead of time, and you want to know it right away.
Yeah, they do extensive research.
How smart.
Yes. The rest of us have to, like, date people
wait
and
10
get
years.
Emotionally involved and then find those
or
things
be married
out.
For 10 years or and have a couple of kids and then find out some, you know, horrible hurdle mm-hmm. that is blocking things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so start with how you find your matchmaker.
So how I found mine was they kind of found me. It went as follows. My family has been very close. You know, here we are sitting in New York, but my family was very close friends with a rabbi and his wife in Los Angeles. And they would come a few times a year to visit us. Whenever we'd go to Los Angeles, we'd stay by them. And she, you know, was like a second mother to me. I didn't talk to her on the phone ever, but whenever I would see her, it was always this spark of love that we shared.
Don't you wish this were television?
Yeah. Go ahead, as usual.
And so I don't know if she knew that I was really, you know, looking per se, but her daughter, who is a friend of mine, was over hanging out with me. We were actually neighbors in New York. She was also in that state. She's a makeup artist, and she was working in the city. And she was talking about some of these guys who have been spending time at her house in California. And she mentioned one of their names. And all of a sudden, when she mentioned his name, she was like, "Oh, why don't the two of you go out?" So
what made
like,
her say that?
I don't know what made her say that. She just felt it. She mm-hmm, felt it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know how it works in our community. You know, call your mom, have her call my mom. And
a proper introduction,
yeah.
Not just being picked up off the street somehow. Yeah.
And she actually, her mom, who was our, should I call her by name? Because she was our matchmaker. She was the one who actually did the process of setting us up.
Wait, who did this?
Olivia. This is the woman who,
the
rabbi's wife from L.A.
Oh, so your friend's mother.
Yeah, my friend's mother.
So she served as the matchmaker.
Yeah, so she served as the matchmaker, Olivia. And she really knew him well because he had spent a lot of time. He was doing his rabbinical studies in Los Angeles. They also have a large Jewish community there and rabbinical school. So he was doing it there and spending a lot of time at their house. So she was like, wow, I know him well. I know her well. You know, I think I can do this. And her husband run a dating service in L.A.
Oh, so they're kind of professional
at
this,
they're
too.
Real professionals. Actually, good. So okay. I got lucky. Even though, you know, the matchmakers in the community are professionals as well, she, you know, deals with the L.A. world, not necessarily just the Hasidic world. So she's got experience on all ends.
Uh-huh.
And the parents did all the research, and there was a call from her of, are you ready next week to go out? So once you know your parents are behind you and that they feel comfortable with the whole circumstance and they're backing you, and there's this real sense of confidence before you go out.
In yourself and the person you're going out with. Yeah. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So even though we're not casually dating, so there is, you feel very nervous. Because, you know, who knows?
The first date's the first date.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But she guided us. She really, you know, prepared us on the phone. And because we were talking, we were dating in New York.
Wait,
and
prepared you, what does that mean?
She just gave us tips on, like, you know, how to, if you're feeling like, oh, you're at loss of words, just what, you know, just different dating tips.
I see.
You
okay.
know, that like you'd open a dating book, but
exactly.
She was
like,
that voice
yeah.
to really ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the interesting part was that to really protect us, to see if we'd, you know, feel compatible with each other, she was our communicator,
mm-hmm.
like the in-between. After the first date, if we didn't want to go on a second date, if it was really awful, we wouldn't have to have that confrontation of, okay, you're awful, I don't want to go out with you. You know, it was like,
yeah, friends.
Yeah, yeah. So we waited to...
So the courtesy is nobody is in that position, and then she's the one that says yes or no, and you
yeah,
don't have to be
yeah.
embarrassed by your date having said goodbye.
So then we
yeah.
liked each
How
other,
nice.
And she set up a second date for us. And after the second date is when we started communicating within each other and only called her for questions.
Oh, this is so sane. This is so wonderful. And you know what? It's not so different when you pick it apart than any of us do. I mean, when you, in secular life, when you get fixed up with somebody, so maybe it's your parents, maybe it's not, but it's a girlfriend, and it's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You go, you know, you get the encouragement, essentially, and everybody knows that for girls, the guy you go out with has to pass the girlfriend test. In other words, has to be approved somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's so common. That's so natural. And then it's the girlfriend who says, you know, well, he said he'd really like to see you again, and would you go out? So that's kind of, I think, a natural way that people tend to want to do things, and then you have it built in, so how good.
And the reason why I feel that I want to do a love letter
yes.
about Olivia is because anytime I think of, you know, my true love, my husband, and all the fun and common ground and just, you know, the way we're raising our children and everything, you know, on a daily basis, the passion there, even when there are a few rough moments, I always know that through her guidance, through her love to set us up together and to bring us together, we are building this love that's going to continue for generations.
Okay, so hold it there for 1 minute.
Just to remind our listeners that this is, in case you don't know, Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time talking with fabulous guests and
yes.
telling their stories and helping them write or start a love letter.
Yes. Okay, so getting back to you and your love letter. So obviously, I don't need to say who gets the love letter because we know it's Olivia. And there's so many things to tell Olivia because you've had a long, close relationship with her. And I'm sure you've told her a lot, but there is something about having it in writing, in your handwriting, that's a gift for those same generations that the love's going to go, because your grandchildren will find this someday. It'll keep popping up over generations. And I'm saying to people, use good indelible ink and good strong paper so it'll last. because it's part of your history, documented in your own hand, and it's an important part of your history because it's the love part. So how do you call her? Olivia?
Yeah, Olivia.
So be Dear Olivia?
Dear Olivia.
So what are the things, there's so many aspects of this that you want to tell her. You just said you wanted to talk to her about her part in setting you up.
And in really guiding us to create the foundation for a wonderful dating experience, which, you know, has now led to a beautiful marriage and bringing children into the world. And she really set the foundation for that, you know, being able to really trust her.
Mm-hmm.
And trust her really as a mentor, and knowing that she's
so one of the things you want to say is you want to say, I always trusted you. See, you want to do real specific things about what's wonderful about her, right?
Yeah.
So that you always trusted her, and in what ways?
In ways that I mean
specific, like as a guide and as her judgment and
as a guide, and also as the way she holds herself as a Hasidic woman. I trusted her advice that she would want to see me in that same light and want the best for me to grow into that, you know, to be a woman who, she is a leader.
Uh-huh.
She, you know, she, not just
so she was like a light for you to follow, like a guide,
yeah,
for you,
yeah,
what you could become.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. To hold those same. So you say the way she holds herself as a Hasidic woman. Can you specify some of those? I think that's really important.
Every word that she says is really a teaching, because she learns a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever, you know, now when we go to LA with the kids, we always stay at her house. And she's always either with someone learning who came over, or on the phone with someone.
So in other words, she's generous.
Yeah, yeah.
So you
with her knowledge, she's generous with her knowledge, and she's also, you know, this is just little things, but she eats very healthy.
Wait, this is see, that's so smart. It's little things and little specifics that make a love letter a great love letter. That's the appreciation that you've noticed all these little things. Okay.
She eats healthy.
Uh-huh.
She, I don't know how old she is, but I know she might have turned 60.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, or
mm-hmm.
might be about to turn 60.
Mm-hmm.
But she goes to weightlifting, like she does a weight class. I don't know if it's lifting, but she does a weight class
mm-hmm.
a few times a week. And just really, she's a real example in many areas of life that...
She has respect for her own self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, if she's doing this.
And she's a breast cancer survivor.
Uh-huh. And that was for a long time?
It wasn't. It was when I was a kid, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, well, so.
I was a child. I didn't know the processes of what
mm-hmm.
went on. And I actually never asked her.
Oh, and so it's not something she even needs to talk about, but you
yeah,
know it's
but
there.
But I know it's there. Like,
uh-huh.
she carries it in a very... For someone to survive something and carry it in such a beautiful way, to really be, you know, an example of strength for
mm-hmm.
others.
So she turns even that into a teaching.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Can you be really specific about something that she taught, other than you should go out with this man, that's something that she taught you that you've always remembered and that you carry with her, with you?
She always, during the dating... Which really helped was, she said, it's you and him in your world, you know? And don't let all the outside pressures influence your dating right now.
Uh-huh.
And it actually came to a point in our dating where, you know, in our dating, they're like, in our communities, this is a common thing,
mm-hmm.
like, the girl likes the guy likes the girl, so when's it going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
The rabbis ask. So she said, take your time.
Oh, don't let community expect.
Yeah. You know, she said, if you need me to, anyone who's putting pressure on you, have them talk to me. And I felt like she had our back. She really had our back to let us go through the process that we wanted to go through and that we needed to go through. Mm-hmm. And
So that was really good advice.
Yeah, it was great advice. And to even think on the flip side, for all the horror stories that could have happened with, I have a lot of friends who have had horror dating experiences, and I just felt like it was a blessing.
So what makes a horror dating experience, I guess, whatever, in any life, huh?
I don't know. Just, you know, I'm saying not, you know, not, God forbid, anything
violent,
terrible.
No,
I'm just saying, like, you know, getting on the first date, either it being a blind date or just really not feeling comfortable with the way the guy looks.
Yeah.
You know, being told, oh, different things that aren't so accurate about the guy. Just the matchmaker has a big responsibility to play.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
There are some people that a few years down the line, when things aren't going so well, they say, oh, matchmaker, it's all your fault. You know? So it...
Mm-hmm. So she took her responsibility seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. And when you say, you know, to research somebody, also, I think today everybody researches. You know, you meet a guy in the secular world and you hit Google by the time you get home and you find out what you can. So everybody wants to know the details, don't you think, before?
Oh, and if someone's been dating for a short amount of time or even a long, but you ask about their family, right? What, you know, what are their parents like? Do they have brothers and sisters?
And you hope to get the truth.
Because that all enters into
into
the relationship, and you marry not just the person, but you marry the whole family.
Yes. There's a wonderful country song that goes, you know, I come from a long line of love, and that you can trust it. And there's something in that, you know.
It's interesting because people, you know, ask me, so how long did you actually date?
I was going to ask you.
And we dated for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you think of that and you think of all this conversation going on and all this dating going on. The dates themselves are concentrated time to get to know each other.
There's a conversation.
No, yeah. It's conversation. Conversation is key.
You're not spending time at miniature golf and not paying attention to each other.
And not going to movies or going to Broadway's or whatnot. It's really to maximize the time, and because there's no intimacy involved, it really gets you to have the ability to know a person with head over heart before you let your heart, you know,
dictate the intimate physical relationship.
Yeah,
sure.
So
how do you know what to talk about? Is that also structured? Is there like a list of things that you cover?
No,
or
that just has to do. You need to have a personality in order to anything in life. You need a personality.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. So, and chemistry is not negotiable. You have to feel some pull. You know, you can't be with somebody that you feel like nothing.
Yeah.
Drawing you.
I should like this person.
Yes. And you can't, that's not such a good basis. I mean, you have to have some real physical chemistry going in your favor, even to want to go on a second date.
And fortunately, for our lifestyle that, you know, even before the date, we're both showing that we have these common goals in mind.
Yeah.
I know he's a rabbi, you know, so there's
certain
an values. an open forum for great discussion there.
Yes. So, and he obviously, well, we'll have to ask him to come do a love letter with us sometime too to get the other side.
But I'm sure he'd love to.
I bet he would. So, I'm guessing that when you talk about dating for 7 weeks, and that sounds kind of shocking in the bigger outside world, when you take away the time you're spending not talking, and you're going to the movies, and you're going to the plays, and you're doing whatever you're doing, if you concentrate the actual talking and really getting to know somebody deeply, that 7 weeks is, you probably do 7 weeks of talking in a year of dating for a lot of people.
So it's 7 weeks to the decision or 7 weeks to the ceremony?
7 weeks to the decision.
Okay.
And then the actual, from the engagement to the ceremony is also pretty short. You know, we here in San Francisco, my wedding was at the Fairmont Hotel, and we hired a wedding planner. And we're like, okay, the wedding's in, I think it was 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, my rate is a quarter of what I usually charge. And we're like, oh, thanks. And she's like, you don't have to say thanks. I plan a wedding usually for a year.
Uh-huh.
So because I only have to work for, you know, less than a quarter of the year, there goes my price.
How nice. Let people know that.
Yeah. So
and they're planning an engagement.
It's also because there is no intimacy involved, you don't want, you know,
to have to wait a whole month.
You don't want to have to wait that long. So you do the real
express.
Yeah.
The real express. Sure, because waiting for a year for a physical loving relationship is not.
That's torturous.
It's torturous, and it's not even like a normal way to go. It would be not a reasonable thing. So that makes sense. That makes wonderful sense. So, do you remember the proposal?
Yes. That needs its own love letter.
Oh, okay.
So we can finish up with Olivia.
Yeah, finish with Olivia, and then we can do Paris another time, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're gonna specify all these things to her, and as much as you can remember specifics. And you talked about how healthy she is and how she carries herself so well. And physical is important in a love letter. When you talk about, you know, the meals you had there and the way she sets a table and the way she dresses and how she looks her best. And all these specifics in a love letter is what makes it, I think, really, really memorable and great and a gift forever.
Mm-hmm.
And although we never send a love letter is a gift custom designed by you for one person, and it'll never go out of style, will always fit, and we don't ever send a gift, so we'll get something back. And sometimes people don't respond for quite a while. They just have to absorb a letter over time. Most people hear eventually. So the reason I'm saying this is, even though we don't write these things for what we get back, if you do have some really interesting response that would make sense to share with us so we could share with our listeners, we'd love it.
For sure.
Okay.
Keep you posted.
Yes. And she's still a part of your life, so it's an ongoing kind of a thing.
And I think a lovely touch, excuse me, and you touched on a bit with the things that she taught you, not only the things that you appreciate about her, but the things that you will take from her, that she has taught you that now you're going to use in your life. I mean, I think that would be a lovely touch.
That's already a gift.
Yes.
Right, and so, but to specify, you know, so often when our experience and mine from doing letters with people for years is, excuse me, the response is always one of two things. It's, I never knew you knew that about me, or I didn't know you would remember that. And sometimes people write a letter and they mention something that not only did the person receiving the letter not think you'd remember, but they didn't remember. Mm. So it's an extra gift they get to be brought back to. So can you mention those specific things that she taught you? I mean, in your letter, some of them?
She taught me how to have an open home.
Mm-hmm.
Yet with boundaries.
Mm.
And I grew up in a wonderful open home.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are the best. And I'm not saying this to criticize, but we let everyone come in.
They still lead their lives like that. Yeah. They're there forever. Mm-hmm.
And she has an open home, but she has, you know, days of the week that the door is locked.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, we're off duty. But when it's open, it's fully open.
Mm-hmm.
And that really taught me a lot and continues to teach me a lot.
Okay, so that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And off-duty means time for your family.
Yeah.
Exactly, just all of you. Wonderful. Just everything you said is so beautiful.
Miriam, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
We love to hear from our listeners, so please, and this is where email is so wonderful, please go to our website at www.loveletterslive.com and click Contact Us and let us know if you have a message from Miriam, if you have a story of your own that you'd like to share, and if you live in the Bay Area, you could be on our program. We'd love to know about that. Ask questions of Janet if you have a question about a love letter or a relationship that you would like to mend or enhance. She'll get back to you. Maybe we'll even have the letter on the show. So, again, thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll tune in every week at this time. We encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words and send them while you still have the chance.
Thank you. And please remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter, as you can see every week, is a special occasion.
So until next time, from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.